The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The Olympic stories that make the news pages rather than simply the sports pages. We're talking about cheating. I'm joined by Cameron Hill from Off the Ball. Cameron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. The one that's come to pass in this Olympics, besides dodgy boxing decisions, the Canada drone.
Yeah, so people might have seen this. Olympic champions Canada were going into this Games, you know, reasonably confident, and they had their first game against New Zealand the Thursday before the opening ceremony. So people might have missed this, but New Zealand reported that one of their training sessions before the game had been disrupted by a drone flying over the practice. Now, the Canadian Olympic Committee confirmed, they kind of said the quiet part loud here, that they were aware of an incident involving a non-accredited member of the Canada soccer support team, issued an apology. It kind of escalated from there. Their manager, Bev Priestman, was dismissed and sent home on early Friday, just before the opening ceremony. The COC admitted that there are indications that the use of drones by the team could go as far back as their triumph at the last Games in Tokyo. So that would include their World Cup game against Ireland last year, if people remember that. Priestman has since been banned from football activities for a year, along with two other Canadian football officials. The country's sports minister announced the government would be withholding funding relating to the women's football team. They were docked 6 points in Group A of this competition, but they still managed to get to the quarterfinals before being knocked out by Germany.
Well, crime almost paid for them.
Almost paid off. Yeah, they still got stopped.
Now, we can go way, way back, though, to find some shenanigans at the Olympics. We're going back to 67 AD.
Yeah. So people will be aware that the Olympics is not a new phenomenon, that the ancient world celebrated them every 4 years or 2 years, because Emperor Nero in 67 AD was doing his tour of Greece, and people might know he's the patient zero of main character syndrome, the ultimate narcissist, said that I want the games on while I'm touring Greece, just while I'm there. So they organized the games 2 years early. He chose the four horse chariot race as his event and seemed to have a few stallions to spare, because he geared up his chariot with 10 horses. He still fell off his own chariot, but managed to be declared the winner and introduced a load of different non-classic Olympic activities like poetry, music and literature, which he all won as well. All of those victories, by the way, have been declared void since his assassination a year later. So he's not in the record books, but the greatest Olympian ever, Nero.
A bit like Donald Trump and golf.
We've never seen this.
Win his club championships.
Yeah.
Now, who is Boris Onyshenko?
So he was a legendary modern pentathlete in the 70s from the Soviet Union. He won silver in 68 and gold in 72 in the team event, and also picked up a silver in the individual event in Munich. So he was coming into the Montreal Games in 76 as a living legend, 39 years of age, but still had it and was still dazzling the crowd and his opponents with his unrivaled fencing ability in particular. He was so quick that during one match against a Canadian competitor, the epee, which is the sword, appeared to whiz over his head, and the athlete simply said it was so fast, I couldn't even see it. So in fencing, points are recorded by an electronic device in each competitor's sword. So when it comes into contact with their opponent's body armor, that's a point.
And it buzzes, you know.
There's an indication. Yeah. So Onyshenko had rigged his sword with a button hidden on the hilt, so it was registering points as he went along. He was going well until a fan in the crowd named Nicholas Bacon, who was watching the event as he was awaiting operation on a brain tumor, which is fascinating in its own right. He was crying foul from the stands. I think it was a double fencing champion from the women's team, the British team, said, let's investigate this. And the officials discovered his skullduggery. He was disqualified and became a bit of a national embarrassment among the Soviet Union. The men's volleyball team threatened to throw him out of a window in the Olympic Village. He was expelled from the Red Army. When he got back to Russia, he received a personal dressing down from Leonid Brezhnev and subsequently became a taxi driver. So quite the fall from grace.
Now, people who are involved in marathon running, I mean, the temptation is, I'll join it late, I'll join it halfway through and have a brilliant finish. It's nothing new.
No, this has happened a few times. So it happened in the 1980 Boston Marathon, and then in the 1904 Games in St. Louis, a New York bricklayer named Fred Lorris won the marathon to the plaudits of the American crowd. They were delighted, even though some spectators claimed to have spotted Lorris in a car during the race. And then he explained afterwards that he started suffering cramps 9 miles in, got a lift from his trainer for 11 miles, finished out the race, seemingly much more energized than before, and claimed it was a joke, but was disqualified. So I don't think he knew he wasn't going to get away for it for long.
Now, you're going to talk to me about state-sponsored weather. Explain.
So the infamous 1980 Games in Moscow, infamously boycotted by 66 countries, including the US and Canada, they were the kind of showcase of the might of the Soviet Union and the communist state. But it was alleged that the organizers in Moscow were opening the gate at one end of the Olympic Stadium at regular intervals, conveniently enough, while the Soviet javelin throwers were competing. So it was argued and thought that the wind blowing through the opening gates was adding distance to their throw. So they were enhanced by a rare weather phenomenon. I thought that's an ingenious way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, whether it actually made any difference, we don't know.
Yeah.
We're going to 1936 for a really ingenious cheat.
So the men's double sculls this year featured probably the best kind of, you got to give them credit where it's due, cheating. So in the heats, the German team, the home team, noticed that the starter, when they put their megaphone to the mouth to call out go across the line, they can't actually see any of the boats across the line. So they said that's a blind spot and were going about a second or two early while they were putting it to their mouth. So they won their heat and were doing incredibly well. The British boat had clocked that they were doing this and started also doing it. So in the final, they beat the Germans, having both of them getting this incredible head start, beat the Germans in front of Adolf Hitler. Jack Beresford of that British pair called it the sweetest race they've ever rode. But I mean, full prize for effort. That's incredible.
But they cheated too.
They still cheated, but you know.
The Germans and the British cheated.
It's what you can get away with.
Okay, extraordinary. But the line of sight using an old megaphone, couldn't get away with it these days when races are won by milliseconds.
Absolutely not. But it's I like these stories of different ways that people cheat, because, you know, cheating is often associated with doping and that's not quite as fun. Whereas actually bending the rules, there's a thing in triathlon swimming where called zip lining, where they actually hold on to the ankles of the swimmer in front to propel themselves a bit further forward. So sometimes you have to give them credit where it's due in terms of, yeah, you might get away with it. If you're caught, that's your own fault. But yeah, it's a little bit of skullduggery.
We haven't been hearing much about doping in these Olympics, but yet there's a belief that it's rife.
I think so. And that's why heading into the Games, there was a bit of not that much excitement. You know, London was so exciting for us, given it was in such close proximity and felt like the last great Games. And then so many athletes have been found to be doping during that, and medals have been confiscated and all that. So far we're all good. There's been some incredible performances and world records, and the cynic in you would wonder how many are going to be rescinded afterwards. But I'm an optimist. I think it's just been a really good Games.
Yeah, and the real problem is you get a medal maybe 3-4 years after you've won it, when a cheat is expelled. Not
you don't
the same.
You don't want to win it like that, do you?
No. But when you think back, the Sonia Sullivan defeat by three Chinese who ran like a clockwork and never to be seen again, or rarely competed anywhere where they were visible. And, you know, should Sonia have had that gold?
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's one of those dances. You want to win it on the day, obviously, and you want to feel like your best performance was the best performance. I think it always rings hollow if you get the medal afterwards. So fingers crossed there'll be none of those stories this time.
Great stuff. Cameron, thank you very much for bringing us a little look. I'm sure there are many more cheating episodes in the Olympics. Cameron Hill from Off the Ball, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.